The following program is a presentation of Grand Slam Ministries.
Can you believe another week has already come? It has. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the 71st edition of the Dan Scott Show, presented by Grand Slam Ministries, our 501c3 nonprofit organization. I am Dan. Thank you for joining us again this week and spending some time with us. We look forward to the next hour when we can do two of my favorite things. We can talk Jesus and talk baseball in the same conversation. If you've been with us any length of time, you know that's probably my favorite combination of things to do when it comes to this on-air thing that we've been doing. Baseball and Jesus, same conversation. I am all in. And today, we are going to spend the bulk of the show with a gentleman by the name of Johnny LeMaster. He played in Major League Baseball from late 1975 through 1987, and he's from Paintsville, Kentucky, which is about 40 to 50 miles from where I grew up in Williamson, West Virginia. So that's home. That's our region. And when I was in junior high and high school, it was a big deal for us in the early and mid-80s to be able to look at Little Paintsville, Kentucky, which was about the size of Little Williamson, West Virginia, and say, hey, there's a guy from there who's playing in the big leagues. And if he can do it, we can do it. And of course, none of us ever did, but it was still one of those inspirational type things. We really looked at Johnny LeMaster as a guy who made it big. And as far as a Major League Baseball career, did he have sterling offensive numbers? No, he didn't. But he was there for 12 years, and it was during the early portion of his career that the most important thing that ever happened to him could have happened. He found Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior. So we're going to talk about all of that with Johnny LeMaster on this week's edition of the Dan Scott Show. But first, you know, I want you to hear something about Grand Slam Ministries.
Here at Grand Slam Ministries, our goal is to share the love of Jesus Christ through multiple platforms, while at the same time executing our core missions of mentorship and helping children in need. The primary way we can effectively do all of those things is through The Dan Scott Show, our weekly Christian radio show that airs in multiple markets around the nation and the world. We are asking you to partner with us to not only sustain what we are currently doing, but to grow both our on-air, online presence, and our ability to fund those core missions. Can you spare as little as $25 per month? How about $10 per month? If we can get 200 partners to join us at each of those small, sustainable levels, we can begin to accomplish everything we believe God has called us to do. So can you help us today with a donation of either $25 or $10 per month? Please go to www.grandslamministries.org for your donation, to get more information, or to ask questions. That's grandslamministries.org. And thank you for supporting The Dan Scott Show and Grand Slam Ministries.
Like what you hear? Have a question or comment? Maybe a guest suggestion? Drop us an email and let us know. Dan@danscottshow.org. And now, back to The Dan Scott Show, presented by Grand Slam Ministries.
This is episode 71 of The Dan Scott Show, and we are happy to have you with us. Just a reminder, as we always try to do somewhere in the show, danscottshow.org is our website. You can find out everything you need to know about us there. If there's something there you're looking for you can't find, you can contact us through there. There's a contact form, or you can simply remember dan@danscottshow.org. We want your feedback. Good feedback, bad feedback, whatever it is, we want to hear from you, and I answer every single response personally. I promise you that. The Affiliates and Archives page is there, so you can go back and catch previous shows, some bonus SoundCloud material as well, danscottshow.org. Let's jump right into this interview with Johnny LeMaster, former big league shortstop, and then went on to a career in coaching. He has a lot of ministry things that he has done and continues to do. And we just opened the conversation by talking about what life is like for Johnny LeMaster right now.
Life right now is really good. I'm one of the shepherds at the congregation that I attend, and I'm in a lot of Bible studies with a lot of people that are not Christians right now. But I'm also trying to shepherd the herd and make sure that they get spiritually fed and are taken care of physically. And if they have any problems, that we get them taken care of. But I'm playing a little golf and seeing my 7 grandkids. I've got 2 that are playing baseball right now in college, and one's at Morehead State here in Kentucky, and the other one's at Motlow State in Tennessee. I've got 2 granddaughters that are playing high school softball, and I've got to be in a lot of different places at a lot of different times. And it's not easy to do if you're a grandfather, which you are, and you understand what I'm talking about.
Yep.
And I have a wonderful wife, and I enjoy being a wonderful husband to her. But other than that, there are other million things that are going on too.
So are you grandpa? Are you granddad? Are you pop? What do they call you?
They call me Papa. P-A-P. Yeah, but I want to tell you something. Whenever they say that word, it's like music to your ears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For some reason, ours have come up with the nicknames Booba, which is me, and Mimi for my wife. But you're right, when they say it, especially the youngest one, who will be 4 in June, when he says it now, the other 2 are 9 and 6. It's not any less special, but when the little one says it, it's you're right. It just melts your heart, man. It certainly does.
It's awesome to be a grandfather.
I love it. Absolutely love it. You are in Paintsville, Kentucky. And
correct.
And for people who don't know, that is, I don't know, 45, 50 miles, depending on how you go, from where I grew up in Williamson, West Virginia. And when I graduated high school in Williamson in 1985, so all the time that I'm coming up through junior high and into high school, we knew there was this guy from Paintsville, Kentucky, that was playing in the big leagues. Johnny LeMaster, he had made it to the major leagues, and we thought, well, man, if he can do it, we can. Now, none of us ever did, but to have somebody from our region, Southern West Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, make it to the big leagues, that was a big deal for us, not to mention what a big deal it was for you.
Well, I was very fortunate. God blessed me with some talent, and when I was in the 8th grade, a scout from the Cincinnati Reds gave me his card. And it started from there. When I got to be a junior and senior in high school, there was actually 50 scouts at the game. Some of them would send 2 or 3 from each team in the major leagues to watch me play. And June the 2nd, I think it was, in 1973, I was the San Francisco Giants' number 1 draft choice. And I was the 6th person in the nation taken that year. And I really didn't know what was going on. It was kind of a whirlwind, but I had signed to play at Arizona State. But I had Coach Brock, which was the coach at Arizona State, I had him on the phone. The Giant scout was knocking at the door, literally. And I was trying to make a decision on what was best for me to do. And I ended up signing with the Giants, and I played 2.5 years in the minor leagues. And then in 1975, I got called up to the big leagues. I was playing against the Big Red Machine, which is a team that I was watching when I was in high school. And mm-hmm. I was in awe when I first stepped out on the field with Joe Morgan and Pete Rose and Johnny Bench and all that bunch. But I played from 1975 all the way to 1987 was the last year I played. And after that, we moved back to Paintsville because we wanted to have our children raised around their grandmothers and granddads and their aunts and uncles. And it really paid off for us. But we wanted to be around people that that they loved and that loved them.
At what age did you realize that you might be pretty good at the game of baseball?
I guess it was my junior year in high school because, you know, these how in the world back in 1972 and 73, the roads in the Paintsville weren't very good. And I was trying to wonder how these scouts were finding out where, but I would go to Hazard and play. And if I came to Williamson, West Virginia, which we did, and we played the Williamson High School there, there would be 30 or 40 scouts in Williamson watching me play. And so I knew something was going on. And then, you know, when the Arizona State coach called, and which they had won two or three College World Series at that time, they had Reggie Jackson playing for them, Rick Mundy and Sal Bando and all that bunch. So I kind of figured it out a little bit. It took me a while because I was kind of a shy kid and always wanted to be very moderate and just blend in with the other people. But then when I started getting all that other attention, it kind of started sinking in about my junior year in high school.
How did you stay grounded during that? Because even back in that era, much less what we see that's going on in the world of sports today, to get that kind of attention, it would have been really easy to have your ego blow up. Why didn't it?
Well, probably two reasons. One was a mother and one was a father. my dad was the guy that got up every morning at 5 o'clock. He had to be at work at 6 and he didn't get home until 5. And then at during the spring and summer, he would go out to the farm and raise a garden and expect me to help. And my mother was a school teacher. She taught second grade for about 20 years. And then she ended up being the assistant superintendent of the whole high school. And I missed one day of school the 12 years that I went to school. And that was the only reason that I woke up one morning throwing up, and she took me to the hospital and wouldn't let me go to school. But then there was another reason. The high school coach that I had, his name was Charlie Atkins, and he played professional baseball himself. He made it all the way up to AAA with the Cincinnati Reds, and then he had some arm problems, and he probably would have made it to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. But he helped me to maintain my modesty and my humbleness when all this was going on. A lot of times, instead of having me to go talk to the scouts and different things, he would go and talk to them with me, and he would help me to be able to say the right things at the right time. But I had the right people around me, if that makes any sense.
Oh, no, it makes perfect sense, because today, and we see it especially in college athletics today, as far off the rails as that's gone, and I can say that with a great deal of confidence because I work in college athletics, there are so many people getting in the ears of athletes that have everybody's interest in mind except for the athlete's interest. So for you to have that kind of support system around you to keep you grounded, to keep you on the right track, to teach you the work ethic that obviously you were taught at an early age, looking back on it now, man, you were really fortunate to have that kind of system around you.
I was, and I count my blessings every day for that. And those are the type of things that I wished all children had nowadays, because we can both see that parents aren't being the parents that they should be. And a lot of grandparents are raising kids now, which that's okay. But, you know, I think God understood that young people were the ones that needed to have kids, raise their kids, and grandparents were supposed to help out when needed. Being a parent is something that I pray for everybody every single day, that they will be the parent that God wants them to be.
We're visiting with Johnny LeMaster, who played in the major leagues from 1975 to 1987. He has coached baseball at the high school level. We're going to talk about all of that. We talked a little bit about your baseball journey. One more question there. We'll come back to the big leagues, but I want to get into your faith journey for a moment. But one more question before we do. You said that you had a scout knocking on your door and Arizona State's coach on the phone, and you were trying to make the decision what to do. What was the deciding factor that had you ultimately signing with the Giants instead of going to Arizona State?
I was their number one draft choice. They came in with a money proposal. Don't get me wrong, the Arizona State going to college for 4 years for free is a money proposal also. But the Giants just came in with a bigger offer, and I don't want to say that they tempted me, but they were good with their the way that they talked to me about the preparation, but how minor league baseball would help me if you spend 4 years in college, which playing for a good program, they were telling me that that would be great, that you would probably get drafted again. But yet I was in the big leagues when I would have been starting my junior year of college. Mm-hmm. And when I look back on it, I think I made the right decision, but sometimes I can't help but think, you know, I don't have a college education. I wished I did have one. I could probably go back and get one, but sometimes I think that, well, what could I have done if I had a college education as far as out here in the business world? But things worked out for me. Don't get me wrong. I think I made the right decision.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, that's two of us. I was a preacher's kid turned loose on the world for the first time, and my college career lasted a semester. And I'll just let your imagination run wild. But that's another story for another time as we continue visiting with Johnny LeMaster. All right, so tell me about your faith journey. Did you grow up in a Christian home?
I did. There's some things that I didn't agree with as far as what they were doing religious-wise, as far as my mother and father, and even both of my grandmothers and grandfathers. But I started studying the Bible for myself, and my wife was a Christian. And we went in 1976 to the Dominican Republic to play winter ball. And on a Sunday morning, my wife got up and said, "I'm going to church." And I was a jerk. I wasn't a Christian. I didn't want to go. I told her, "Why are you believing in this stuff anyway?" And but she went out and got a we had a chauffeur there that the owner of the team would allow us to have a car anytime we wanted. But she went out looking for a church to go to. She was looking for the Church of Christ, and she couldn't find it. The next Sunday morning, she woke up and did the same thing, and she still couldn't find it. Every Sunday morning that we were there, she got that chauffeur and drove around Santo Domingo, which was a very, very large city, and hunted for the church, and she never could find it. But she had an appetite to do what God wanted her to do and to worship Him on the first day of the week. And we came home after the winter, and it was February the 20th, and her example for me persuaded me to do what I needed to do. And I called the preacher at the Painesville Church of Christ. It was 12 o'clock at night. There was 4 inches of snow on the ground. And I said, "Meet me at the church building. I need to be baptized for the remission of my sins." And he didn't hesitate. He said, "I'll be right there." So February the 20th is my spiritual birthday, 1979. And, ever since that day, I told my mom when she went to the airport with me and my wife when I was getting ready to fly out to go to spring training the last week of February, I said, "Mom, I'm not going to be a hypocrite." And she understood what I was telling her. But about 15 years later, studying with her and my father, I got them out of the things that they were in, and they eventually obeyed the gospel plan of salvation themselves, plus my brother and my sister, or his wife and his son and daughter, and my first cousin and her son. So I've tried to have as many Bible studies with my family as I possibly could, and it's paid off and in the long run. But I've been a Christian since 1979, February the 20th, and I'm still rocking and rolling.
That's fantastic. We are visiting with Johnny LeMaster. So you'd had 3+ years in the big leagues before salvation. So when you show up in spring training in 1979, what was that like? Did your teammates immediately notice that, hey, there's something different about this guy?
They did. And they noticed that I wasn't cursing. I wasn't drinking alcohol. But there was just a different demeanor in me. But after a couple of years, that they saw that I was serious about it, because I've seen a lot of guys in the big leagues say that they're Christians, but their actions didn't perform as far as them being what God wanted them to be. But mm-hmm. whenever they had a religious question, who do you think they came to? They came to me. I ended up baptizing one of my teammates and his wife, Atlee Hammaker. You can look him up. He was a left-handed pitcher with the Giants.
Right. And I remember him.
I baptized one of our trainers. His name was Gary Iacini, and his wife. But we would periodically have Bible studies once in a while we were on the road. It's tough in baseball because you're playing Sunday day games to get to worship service. And a lot of times they would allow me to have the preacher at the South San Francisco Church of Christ come in and do a service for us on Sunday mornings while we were in San Francisco. And it really helped. And a lot of players, not only on my team, but the visiting players on the other team would come over to what they called chapel. Mm-hmm. But it was, we actually had a worship service and did what we were supposed to do on the first day of the week. And I think that had a lot of influence on people too that were not Christians, because they started asking a lot of questions.
Was this the time frame, the days before what became, I guess, the official organized baseball chapel? Had that started yet? Because they have that, you know, I do the high class A team for the Red Sox, the Greenville Drive, the home games, and they have a chapel in the clubhouse for both the home and the visiting teams on Sunday Correct. Mornings. Had that officially started when you were playing?
It was just getting started. It probably was just getting started in 1979. And there were some visiting preachers that would come in and conduct a chapel service. Like I said, I was able to bring in the preacher there from South San Francisco, and he would conduct a chapel service for us also. And sometimes, you know, I would lead a chapel service, and there would be times that a so-called preacher couldn't get there, mm-hmm. but we still would go ahead and have it and say a prayer and try to get our minds in the right direction. And then we'd go out and beat up on each other.
Well, and I was just going to say that there used to be a feeling in sports that, you know, well, we don't want any Christians on this team because they're soft, they're not competitive, they're, you know, all of those things. And I'm sure that you heard growing up and maybe even during your playing days. But I think we've seen enough over the last number of years to know that you can still be totally sold out to the Lord and still be competitive and play hard and play the game the right way.
Well, he tells us in the Bible with our work to do it to the best of our ability. And if we're going to be playing baseball, we got to do it to the best of our ability. And that means breaking up a double play. Well, nowadays, they can't break up double plays like they used to, or run into the catcher at the plate. Or the game has gotten soft, not the Christians. But
right.
We went out and you know, unfortunately, there any time that the Giants and the Dodgers got together, there was always some type of emptying the dugouts always going on. Just, I don't know why, but there would always be somebody that would be chirping or running their mouth, either on the Giants team or the Dodgers team, but you'd still have to go out there and protect your teammates. And I don't think Christians are soft. And in reality, I think they're tougher than non-Christians, because if you grow up and you've been around a lot of cursing and different things, and you've done it yourself. And I coached college baseball for 12 years, mm-hmm. and at the University of Pikeville in Pikeville, Kentucky.
Right.
I would try to tell my kids, I said, listen, it takes more of a man not to cuss than it does to cuss, because it takes some patience, it takes some work, and it takes some real self-discipline to be able to put that in play and show people that you can say other words than words that shouldn't be said.
And my wife is a UPike alum. Of course, it was Pikeville College when she graduated from there. But
all right.
Yeah, that's where she graduated from. And the other thing I'm thinking of is I've been in enough big league locker rooms to know that oftentimes every other word consists of four letters. And so that's kind of a mindset, and people almost use it as an excuse. So they'll say, well, that's baseball. That's what you do.
Yeah. But it's not baseball, and that's not what you should do.
Exactly.
As God says, you know, if you look at James 1:26, if he says you're not even a religious person if you don't know how to bridle your tongue.
Which is always fun when I read those passages in the Bible that talk about that, and I'm a broadcaster and talk for a living. Johnny LeMaster, our guest on this week's show. Let's go back to baseball for a second. September 2nd, 1975.
I remember that day well.
Major league debut.
Yeah.
First trip to the plate.
Exactly.
Tell me what happened.
I'd played a game in Tucson, Arizona the night before, and I was being called up to the big leagues on September the 2nd. We were playing the Los Angeles Dodgers. It was a day game. I'd just flown into San Francisco, me and a couple other guys that got called up. I'd just gotten my uniform. They'd issued it to me. I'd just gotten dressed, and it was about time for the game to start. I wasn't in the starting lineup. A shortstop by the name of Chris Spire was the starting shortstop at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But his first at bat, he pulled a hamstring running down the first base line. And Bill Rigney was the manager. I thought sure he was going to holler at one of the utility infielders that had been there all year. But he said, LeMaster, get your glove and get in there. And you know how teammates are. They hid my glove on me. I didn't even have my shoes tied. I thought, here I am, and I'm going to get a chance to watch a big league game from the dugout. I was just excited to watch the game. So by the time I get out to shortstop, the pitcher's already warmed up. I don't even get a chance to throw a ball over to first base. Luckily and fortunately, they didn't hit one to me that inning. There's no telling where I would have thrown it to if they had it. But it comes my turn to bat. And Don Sutton is on the mound. He's a guy that's in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. He's passed away now. But he was one of the best pitchers that the Dodgers have ever had. And he had a curveball that was just – it was awesome is all I can tell you. But I walk up to my first plate appearance, and he throws me a curveball. And I swing at it. And I bet you I miss it by 2 feet. And there's a guy right behind home plate with a Dodger hat on. And he said, hey, LeMaster, this is the big leagues. I'm thinking to myself, no kidding, partner. But he throws me another curveball, the second pitch. And I bet you I miss it by 3 feet. And that guy's back there behind the home plate hollering again, LeMaster, this is the big leagues. But on the third pitch, he was probably trying to knock me down or brush me back a little bit so he could throw his curveball again. He was trying to set it up. But his fastball got out over the plate. And we had a guy on second base. His name was Von Joshua. And I hit a dead line drive into center field. And at that time, Candlestick Park was AstroTurf. And the center fielder came in to try to catch it on one hop to make a play at the plate. But it hit a seam in the AstroTurf, and it bounced about 15 feet over top of his head and rolled all the way to the center field wall. And I was scared, so scared that I hit every base perfect. It was probably the quickest I ever ran in my life. I hit first perfect, I hit second perfect, I hit third perfect, and it was a stand-up inside the park home run the first time I ever went to the plate. And yeah, that's something that you will never, ever forget.
You know, it's almost one of those things where it happens, you just go on into the locker room, you take your uniform off and retire right there, because how do you top that?
I could have said, this game is easy, guys. Just said, see you later.
The interesting thing about it is that you only hit 21 more home runs the rest of your career.
And one of those other ones was another inside the park home run.
Wow. You became known, as a lot of shortstops were in the big leagues in that era, as Goodfield no hit, and still able to play for 12 years. So however accurate that is, but that's reputations that some guys get. But you found out exactly how good big league pitching is, didn't you?
I did. And there, you know, you face a guy like J.R. Richards or Nolan Ryan or Steve Carlton, Tom Seaver, even Don Sutton, Fernando Valenzuela. These guys are good, or they wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
But baseball is a business, and people don't get to the big leagues or stay in the big leagues on luck. Because if you can't play and you're not doing your job, believe me, you're not going to be there very long. And you can see guys that will come up, they'll be there for a week and you'll never, ever see them again in the big leagues. And people don't realize how many people actually come and go and are never seen again. But you know, when you get there and you're able to stay there more than 10 years, you've done something.
Absolutely.
And I'm not bragging on that, but I can say I've done something.
Listen, one day is one day more than me and millions of other people have made, you know, and that was my dream growing up, like a lot of little boys in that region and really all over the country, I'm sure, to play in the major leagues, because the team that I idolized growing up, I was an 8-year-old when I fell in love with that Big Red Machine team in 1975. That's a pretty good team to fall in love with.
No kidding.
If you think about it.
Flat blood.
Yeah, they could. So let me ask you about some players. You mentioned a couple. Nolan Ryan, what was it like facing Ryan?
I didn't mind hitting off of him. His fastball was straight. It was over 100 miles an hour. He didn't learn how to really to pitch until the last 5 years of his career, because all he wanted to do was strike you out.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care what else happened. He was out there to strike you out. But he was a great guy, I'll tell you that. But now you face a guy like J.R. Richards, where he had a fastball that was over 100 miles an hour too, but it moved, it tailed. But he also had a 90-mile-an-hour slider. And you really couldn't lean out over the plate to hit his fast or hit his slider, because he would bust you inside in a heartbeat. And I'm going to tell you something. I've been hit once or twice with a ball at that speed, and it does not feel good at all.
And he's the guy that I was going to circle back to after Ryan, because he had the stroke that ended his career. And I get the sense that had that not happened, J.R. Richard probably would have been a Hall of Famer. I don't think people really remember how good that guy was.
When he had his stroke, he was 11-1 with like a 1.34 ERA. Whenever the Astros played the Dodgers, he could throw his glove out on the mound and beat them. because the only starter in the Dodgers lineup that played whenever he pitched was Steve Garvey. Lopes took the day off. Say took the day off. Russell took the day off. Dusty Baker took the day off. But I don't really blame him. But he was hard to hit. A pitching staff that they had at one time, they would throw Nolan at you, then they would throw JR at you, and then here comes Joe Niekro with a knuckleball. Mm-hmm. 55-mile-an-hour knuckleball. And you would be so much in a slump after you left there for 3 days that it was crazy. But they had a good pitching staff.
No question.
But Jay, he was just running around the Astrodome on the outer circle when he had his stroke. And he was paralyzed on his left side. He tried to make a comeback, but he couldn't feel the baseball. People bunted on him, and there wasn't nothing he could do about it.
Yeah.
His career was over, but a friend of mine by the name of Enos Cabell, that used to play for the Astros, mm-hmm. but he played for the Giants for a while too. He found him living in a cardboard box under a bridge, and he went and got him and took him to the Astros front office, and they gave him a job. And as far as I know, he's still working for the Astros. And he's cleaned his life up. He was hooked on cocaine quite bad.
Yeah, I remember that story. I didn't know Enos Cabell was the one who found him, but I remember that story of one time him living under a bridge. It says a lot about the Astros organization that they would take him in and help him during that time. The place that you played, San Francisco, the Giants organization, there were obviously a lot of Hall of Famers who came through and played for the Giants. Was Willie Mays hanging around a lot while you were there? Did you see him much?
I did after his career was over.
Yeah.
Because he San Francisco, he would come into the clubhouse quite a bit, but he got traded, I think it was in 74, to the Mets. And in 75, got to play against him mm-hmm. while he was with the Mets, but I never got a chance to play with him. But I've been back to San Francisco several times, and when they actually had a Johnny LeMaster night there, where they put my picture on all the tickets that were sold, and he was there, and Willie McCovey was there. I got to spend a lot of good time with them. But those are two guys. One of them, both of them are in the Hall of Fame. They're just good people.
You mentioned there's always something going on between the Giants and Dodgers, and that goes back to them being in New York for all those years before they both moved after 1957 out to California. So there's always bad blood between them. When you came up, did you get the instructions that we don't like these guys?
Now, you may not believe this, but the first hitting instructor I ever had, his name was Hank Sauer.
Mm-hmm.
He led the league 1 year in home runs when he was, I think, playing with the Chicago Cubs. But first day I flew into Casa Grande, Arizona in 1973. I just flew from Paintsville to Phoenix and had to catch a ride from there to Casa. That's where the Giants spring training was at. And Hank has a little meeting with us, and he says, listen, he said, we don't care if you lose every game that you play as long as you beat the Dodgers. And it was on right there. You knew it was on.
Day one.
Yeah, day one.
That's outstanding. I think baseball in its – this is just my opinion, and it's – I even hate to use the word globalization because you want to grow the game, but with all the interleague stuff that's done and everything that's happened – losing those rivalries, I don't think has been good for the game. I mean, I know the Giants and Dodgers still play, and I get it, but it's when I was growing up in the old National League West, you know, and of course they were the two preeminent teams, and it was the Reds and the Dodgers. And to this day, I'd still like to see the Reds and Dodgers play more because they really went at it back in those days. And yet the schedule now, you know, they may play three times a year.
Yeah. Yeah, when I played, you would go to each team's place twice, and they would come to your place twice. You play 18 games against them, and then you would only play 9 games against the people in the National League East at their place and your place. But nowadays, you're right, the scheduling is kind of wacko, but that has changed a lot of the rivalries. But I'd hate to say this, but unfortunately, the money has changed a lot of the rivalries.
Yeah. Yeah, they're commodities and they're business people more than they are ball players. And you know, not that I'm against people making money, but I think the game has been hurt quite a bit as time has moved on. And the biggest thing, I think you use the word soft. I think you're right. I think the game has gotten soft.
It has. There's no doubt in my mind. The athletes have gotten bigger and stronger and faster, but the game itself has gotten soft.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that I ever wanted to see anybody get hurt. When you get taken out at a double, I've had both of my big toenails ripped off, where their spikes would get under my shoes while they were sliding. I've been kicked. I've been side body blocked. They tried to knock me out into left field, but it was just part of the game, and everybody understood that. And you know, even catchers that got run over at the plate, very seldom did you see them get up and want to fight. But once in a while you would, but it was part of the game. And you know, throwing inside, it was part of the game. You knew you were going to get knocked down sometimes. But nowadays, if a pitcher throws inside, man, that hitter is looking knives at him for the rest of his life.
Well, I think part of it is that the owners now, they weren't then, but now are paying so much money that they're trying to protect their investments. So they've adjusted the rules. You can't do some of those things that you've been talking about. They're paying these guys millions and millions of dollars. They want them out there on the field playing and selling tickets and bringing people to the ballpark.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah.
I really, truly do. But, you know, you still want your player to play his hardest and to play his best. And unfortunately, the game is changing a little bit. And sometimes change is good and sometimes change is bad.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Agree with you 100%. I got to ask you about one thing, and then we're going to get into wrap-up mode. We're talking about performing and doing things, and fans can be, let's say, fickle. Fan is short for fanatic. Did I see a photo of you going to bat once with a jersey that had the word boo on the back instead of your name?
I wore the boo jersey. Somebody photoshopped that. I don't know how they got it on the internet. I only got to wear it for 3 outs defensively because the clubhouse manager was in our dugout with my regular jersey before I ever got to bat with it. And our general manager had fired him. And you want me to tell you the whole story?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Okay. I was having a rough week one time. I made a few errors and threw a couple of balls away. And the fans started booing a little bit. And the next day it got worse. The next day it got worse. And I was laying in bed one night, and I thought my wife was asleep. And all of a sudden she just props up and says, "Why don't you just change your name to Boo?" And it kind of, a light bulb went on in my head. And I went the next day and asked our equipment manager, his name was Eddie Logan. He actually came with the Giants from New York to San Francisco. But, he thought I was just doing it for a joke, and he had me a jersey made up with Boo on the back of it, my number and the whole ball of wax. And it took me about 2 weeks to actually build up enough nerve to put it on. And after infield and batting practice and everything like that was over, I went in and put the jersey on, but I had my jacket over top of it, so nobody couldn't see what was going on. And they were introducing the starting lineups. And as they do that, when they said Johnny LeMaster at shortstop, that's when I run out. And that's when I took my jacket off and threw it back in the dugout. But Rob Andrews, one of our utility infielders, was standing by our manager, Joe Altobelli. And Joe couldn't see real well. And Rob Andrews said, when he looked at it, he said, "What's he got Bob on the back of his jersey for?" But anyway, I went out and played three innings with it. I mean, not three innings, but three outs.
Right.
And when I come back in, the equipment manager, there's sweat pouring off of his head. He said, "What have you done to me? You have got me fired." But he got his job back.
Yeah.
But anyway, at the end of the game, when it's all over, we're back in our locker room. Where do you think all the microphones were stuck at?
Right in front of your face.
Right in front of my face. There was about 30 or 40 microphones stuck in my face. But here's the thing about it. The media and the press loved it.
Mm-hmm.
The fans loved it. And I try to tell people every once in a while when I'm doing a religious talk, don't be afraid to do something crazy every once in a while, as long as it doesn't offend God.
Right.
And I did something that was crazy. And I'm the first person that ever got to wear their nickname on the back of their jersey.
I laughed because it's funny. Back in that era, there was talk about baseball needs to be more colorful. They need to do this for the fans. This, and then when somebody does something like that, they panic.
Well, the general manager fined me. There was a letter in my seat in front of my locker. I opened it up. It's from the general manager. "You have been fined this amount of dollars for being out of uniform." But he did that, and I didn't have to pay it. So I was glad. I think when he saw that the media and the fans loved it, that he kind of got off of his anger kick.
Oh, that's awesome. Johnny, I really appreciate your time. I want to be respectful of it. At the end of the day, we know what the most important thing is, and that's the relationship we have with Christ.
Right.
Above and beyond anything else, that is the most important thing. So you've lived a life that God has blessed. You've had a major league career that many of us would have loved to have had. You've had all of these things. At the end of the day, what do you want your legacy to be? How do you want people to remember Johnny LeMaster?
Well, first and foremost, that he was a Christian. Secondly, that he was a good husband. Thirdly, that he was a good father. Fourthly, that he was a good grandfather. And coming up here, fifthly, in October, that he's going to be a great grandfather. And that is people's legacy. It's not what you have done or what you do. It's the influence that you've had on in others in your life. That will be your legacy of what type of influence that I've had on other people.
Mm-hmm. And we all want, when that day comes, to hear Jesus say, "Well done, good and faithful servant."
I was just with a member of our congregation yesterday that passed away, and I know that he was a good soldier in Christ, and I was with his wife, and we were both sad, but yet we were both happy. We grieve for his loss, but we know that he's better off than we are now because of the way he lived his life. And it's going to happen to all of us someday. Our body wears out. That's the way God designed us. And you're right. Those words, "Welcome," is what we all want to hear.
You know, and interestingly enough, as we thank Johnny LeMaster for his time and close out this segment, I was just back in my home area of southern West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, over this past weekend to act as a pallbearer for my aunt's funeral. She passed away about a week shy of her 82nd birthday. And she loved the Lord. And I know that when she died on Thursday, May the 2nd, she went into the presence of Christ, and that's exactly what she heard: "Welcome." and well done, good and faithful servant. Thank you again, Johnny LeMaster. We'll be back and put a quick wrap on things right after this. Teenage boys and young men today are in crisis. Statistics show that a home without a father or male role model present is the single biggest indicator of poverty, behavior issues, drug and alcohol abuse, criminal activity, and yes, imprisonment. At Grand Slam Ministries, one of our core missions is developing a mentorship program to teach boys how to become strong Christian men and then teach those men to be the biblical husbands, fathers, and church and community leaders the Bible calls us to be. We need your prayers, we need your ideas, and we need your support. Visit our website, GrandSlamMinistries.org, to find out more about our mentorship mission and prayerfully consider how you may be able to assist us. Again, that website is GrandSlamMinistries.org.
Follow us on social media. Search Grand Slam Ministries on Facebook and Grand Slam for God on Twitter. And don't forget Dan's personal and public figure sites on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You're listening to The Dan Scott Show, presented by Grand Slam Ministries.
All right, we're back for a final quick segment to wrap up this week's edition of The Dan Scott Show. Again, thank you to Johnny LeMaster for joining us. And thank you to Daryl Chaney, the former Big Red Machine member who allowed me to come and visit his golf tournament a few weeks ago down in Helen, Georgia, and get some interview contacts. We had Rocky Shipes a couple of weeks ago. We had Johnny LeMaster today, and coming up, we are working on former big leaguer Glenn Hubbard and former NFL defender Evan Oglesby, all out of that Daryl Chaney golf tournament down in Helen. So, Daryl, again, thank you so very much. We also have coming up later this month a return visit from J. Warner Wallace. You know, the Cold Case Christianity author, the former detective who was an atheist who used his detective skills to investigate whether the resurrection was real, found out that it was, came to Christ, and has become an amazing apologetics champion for the Christian faith. He's got a new book coming out, and we're going to have him on again later on this month, and still looking at a number of other folks, probably in the 14 to 15 range, that have already said, yes, we will do the show. So we're very thankful for that, and just praising God that He continues to bring these amazing guests to what we are doing here on this radio show. Thank you for listening. I'll again encourage you to go to danscottshow.org if you have any questions about what we do here, and encourage you to consider making a one-time or a monthly gift, as little as $10 or $25 a month, to help us keep this radio show on the air and keep going with some of the other things we want to do, including our core missions. All of that can be found at our website, danscottshow.org, and the Grand Slam Ministries site is actually a page there. So it's a one-stop shop for you to go check it all out, and we look forward to seeing you there and talking to you here on this show again next week. Tell people about us, share this, and again, if it's made any impact at all on you, let us know, dan@danscottshow.org. Back with you again 1 week from today. Until then, I'm Dan. God bless you. So long, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this week's Dan Scott Show. To hear it again, catch up on past shows, or find out more about Grand Slam Ministries, please visit our website, danscottshow.org. And while there, prayerfully consider making a gift to help us in our mission to share the love of Jesus Christ. That's the danscottshow.org.